Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, publicbroadcasting.org. It's the polka of free speech. That music that you just heard is technically a polka. It's called the Bonfrey Polka, and it was written by one of the Strausses. Is it Richard Strauss? One of the Strausses. Fred Strauss. I don't know. Anyway, go to republicbroadcasting.org. Click on the donate button. Send badly needed fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Operators, oh, no, forget the extension. Forget the extension, but operators are standing by. We have with us live, by popular demand, former Louisiana Representative Dr. David Duke. Dr. Duke, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here with you, Patrick. I'm always honored to be on a program with a man who describes Jewish power as writing the zombie corpse of European mankind to world hegemony.
And you know, I've been talking about my permanently forthcoming book for a long time. I actually, about 24 hours ago, I sent in the revisions to the publisher. So we'll see. Maybe it's really going to happen. We'll see.
Anyway, well, you're a very erudite, educated, astute, and intellectual individual, and I'm very looking forward to your publishing the book. I've been privileged by you to see some of the parts of it, and I thought they were really excellently written, and I'm really proud to have you often as a co-host of my show. I really appreciate you.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, likewise. Anyway, I know that you had a few things on your mind that you were wanting to get to. So we're going to get to some stuff. And then we will take selected well-behaved callers later in the show. So, what do you want to get to? You had me listen to a segment of the Kim Iverson show with a former Jew.
If that's even possible, but he is a former Jew. At least religiously, he's not Jewish by religion anymore.
Yeah.
Nor is he a Zionist, so he doesn't identify with Jewish ethnicity. I don't know how you divorce yourself of your genealogy entirely, but he certainly is not supporting the crimes of Israel, and he's extremely outspoken, and I'm very happy to hear that, and I'm thankful for it.
So, I mean, there are people who divorce themselves from these ideologies, and, you know, regardless of what their genealogy is, they can come out and make positive contributions. There's a number of examples like that. Well, so what was it about this gentleman? I don't remember his name, but what was it about this gentleman that
you thought was... I think his name was Tower, I believe, but he's very interesting. He goes into a lot of the conspiracy theories, but, you know, I think in some ways the conspiracy theories, even like 9/11, even though I certainly agree with the overriding conspiracy that if you call it a conspiracy, it's one of those toxic words that they use to describe any of the facts on the ground. And the facts on the ground are that our policy in the Middle East, by any way you want to cut it, caused the horror and the disaster of 9/11. When you commit mass murder against whole populations on behalf of Jewish hegemony in the world, and that's what really it is, it's when we talk about globalism, we're talking about Jewish domination of the world through the United States and through other, you know, Jewish infiltration of institutions. It's amazing to see how many Jews are in so many global influencing organizations and in so much global media, like perfect examples, Wikipedia, Google, which are in billion-dollar contracts with the Mossad, with Israeli intelligence, and these other organizations. But the thing about this interview, which is very interesting, is, again, here's another Jewish gentleman that's pointing out what I've been writing about in my books for years. Certainly Since My Awakening, published in 1998, in which I literally talk about David Ben-Gurion and his famous Look magazine interview, where world leaders were asked what their prophecy is, so to speak, for the world over the next few decades. And okay, Ben-Gurion, by the way, who is kind of a self-proclaimed atheist, but a very radical Jewish supremacist.
Rebels connection. Okay, we're going to do something about that.
I heard everything. Did you? Maybe you lost connection, but I don't know. We'll have to ask the engineer on your show if you still heard it, so we won't retrace ourselves.
I'm back. I think everything's good now.
Okay. So I was describing what this Jewish individual said very courageously. He did like a two-hour documentary about Kennedy and the incredibly circumstantial but massive evidence that Jews really had a big stake in stopping the Kennedy presidency, because Kennedy had announced numerous times that he was not going to allow Israel to pursue nuclear weapons, that he believed that the Jews had to allow return to Israel proper, the Palestinians, that they expunged, that they ethnically cleansed from their own land, and other issues that they saw critical, and that he even threatened three times Israel to withhold money, which is very few presidents have done. Even Biden hasn't really done that in reality, even though he kind of acts like he's going to do that, but he doesn't do it. I mean, it's amazing. They build this floating pier, which they're now going to destroy after 25, 26 days of it, to so-called get aid in. And all they had to do was just tell Israel, no more bombs, no more guns, no more support, no more money, no more support in the United Nations unless you allow aid to get into these 2 million Palestinian men, women, and children. And, of course, it's always the children that suffer the most in a famine, because it's children who must have these nutrients in a high metabolic state that you have as a child. You must have these nutrients even to grow properly, even for your brain to develop properly, spinal cord, your development as a human being.
And also children are much more susceptible to diarrhea, which is...
And diseases, yes.
Yeah, and diseases.
And when we say diarrhea, diarrhea is a nice name for dehydration of the body on massive levels from all sorts of different kinds of pathogens, toxins, as well as, you know, viruses, bacteria. But all Biden had to do is say those words, I mean, one sentence to Netanyahu, and said, open all these borders, let these trucks in immediately, or we're going to cut off all aid, and we are going to stand by the entire rest of the United Nations Security Council and the world against your incredibly, and there's no other way to put it, monstrous crimes against Palestine, which, by the way, recently they came out and showed in Lancet, which is one of the leading medical journals in the world, if not the most known medical journal in the world. It's very much old and dated to medical journals and other journals compared to like the New England Medical School Journal, which is one of the most famous in America. And in this article, which is very good scientific analysis, it showed other conflicts that have been documented and proven by, investigation and proof that in almost all conflicts, we have massive civilian casualties of bombing and physical harm, that you have a residual crime or a residual death rate and maiming rate that's often 4 or 5 times greater than the actual rate of deaths by the bombing and the crushing of buildings on people and so forth. And so they're saying a conservative estimate in Gaza, especially when you think of Gaza as being so compacted in a very tiny percentage of geography, that they've dropped more bombs on Gaza in 7 months than they did over the entirety of Ukraine, thousands of square miles. And it's just amazing to think about that they've dropped more bombs, and many 2,000-pound bombs blow up 2 blocks at a time. And so the mass murder and maiming and pain, even again, for everyone killed, probably there's three or four maimed people. And that's pretty much the way it is in war, especially when you have civilian bombing. So this is a massive crime of unprecedented proportions. I don't think there's ever been a single war in a single, you know, small area affecting more people, really, in a short period of time than what's going on right now in Gaza. And the fact that America would be complicit in this is a complete, but it's a shaming of every American citizen. And it's a stain upon all of us. Even those like you and I that are American citizens, we don't support these policies. But again, it's still a country we pay taxes to. It's a country that, you know, we live in, and we've tried to support the interests of America. But it's time that we correct all these shibboleths. We call them shibboleths. That's a good dictionary word. You know, these lies that they constantly prevaricate us with. I mean, they tell us every day that, oh, Israel is our greatest ally. And thank God for Israel. Biden said if we didn't have Israel as an ally in the Middle East, we'd have to create one. Israel is not our ally. Israel has actually bombed American military targets and American military soldiers. They had 34 and sailors. 34 Americans die, 173 wounded, and the attack on USS Liberty was obviously an American ship. We had American installations in Egypt attacked by the Mossad with a bombing campaign, trying to get us into an unjust war with Egypt. We've had the most damaging spy in American history, which is Jonathan Pollard. Maybe the second most dangerous spy, or maybe the most dangerous spy, were also Jews, the Rosenbergs, who were communists. Between communist Jewish spies and Zionist Jewish spies, we don't need any other people spying on us. We've got more spying going on than any time in the entirety of the rest of American history, don't we?
Well, I mean, we've got spying of the traditional kind. You also have massive surveillance through high-tech means. You know, we're at the point where everybody's carrying around a cell phone, and maybe if you really know what you're doing, you can change the default so it's not cell phone has to identify where you are at any given time, otherwise it can't route calls to you. So I mean, you know, this information, where you are, and it's pretty precise information too. Where you are at any given time is logged. The phone, the big media companies, you know, telecom companies know it. And at least since 9/11, they've been sharing it with the government. I remember 20-something years ago, this was one of those five famous shows what's the guy's name? Cameron and Britt Hume. What was Cameron's first name? Carl Cameron. Britt Hume did these,
a four-part series on the Jewish foreknowledge and massive evidence that Israel knew that 9/11 attack was coming. So
one of those shows was on the foreknowledge that Israel had. Another one of those shows was on, you know, the telecom, and of course
the total penetration of our communication networks, even in terms of government agencies and police agencies, by the state of Israel and the Mossad. Right.
So, you know, AT&T and Warner Brothers, they're providing this information to Israel. And then it wasn't part of Carl Cameron's report, but right around the same time, there were university hospital systems that were employing Israeli firms to manage their to manage people's health data, which you might think, well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, if you're trying to develop biological weapons that are targeted at certain ethnic groups, that type of information can be pretty useful. You know, so there's all this this stuff. You know, 9/11 was one watershed event, which led to the creation of a big hunk of the infrastructure of a, you know, really scary totalitarian police state. The coronavirus led to a lot more of that. We're in precarious times. I want to ask you, Dr. Duke, we are in precarious times, but is there reason for hope? Are you still an optimist? Because I think you've always been an optimist.
Well, I think I've always believed in the human spirit. And the human spirit can be crushed to earth. People can be lied about. They can be persecuted. They can be killed and murdered. They can be repressed in other ways. They can be enslaved. But it seems to be irrepressible over time. And I'm very much encouraged by the fact that I believe that the world is coming to a knowledge of the true nature of Jewish supremacism. And really, you can call it Jewish supremacy, you can call it Jewish hegemony, but through their control of the United States and control of much of the media of the world. And when I say that, I'm not talking in hyperbole. I'm not exaggerating anything. Because we have a handful of organizations, literally a handful. In fact, you know, there's five organizations beneath the five fingers of your hand that control and have massive influence over 80 to 90% of humanity, because they control Google, which the enormous power of Google is unprecedented to control human thought, to direct the human mind to where the owners of Google and the people that run Google want it to go, to suppress data and information and knowledge that they want to suppress, they don't want you to hear. They can do that easily. They can block or silence voices that they don't like my YouTube was silenced. And the ADL, in fact, they let them police them in many ways. And I can show you articles about that policing by the ADL, which is a Jewish partisan supremacist organization. It's not a civil rights organization. And Google literally controls 85% of the search engines of the world, which means when someone goes to search a product or a person or a candidate or an ideology or a policy or anything, they have algorithms. They don't have to have somebody just monitoring it. They have algorithms set up that they can recognize what a person is looking for and then make sure that they direct it. I'm sorry, I'll get rid of this. Let me see this. Hello?
That's okay. The listeners to the
okay.
David Duke
I'm
show.
I'm sorry about that. That's right. This is a live show. I can't take an interruption. So where were we? So I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you just fine.
Okay. So the policies, you know, if someone wants to search a candidate or a person's candidate, they're going to go to Google first. They can hide any websites they want to hide. In fact, Twitter is one of the biggest policies right now, and Twitter is, even though they wanted to sue the ADL, they still have kept up the ADL number one target off Twitter. As ADL said, all the other four main people that the ADL announced had to be kicked off Twitter, Alex Jones, Nick Fuentes, Tate, and another one, I can't remember his name, they're all gone. You know, they're all gone, but they're all reinstated except for one, me. And the reason why is, I believe, obviously, is because I take full bore aim at the target of Jewish extremism, Jewish supremacism, and Jewish hegemony. That is an inescapable fact for understanding the danger to the freedom of the mind, freedom of speech, freedom of thought, and the inference to this and everything. Like the COVID is a perfect example. How many major, it's just scientists that simply didn't go along with the media narrative, which were getting money from Big Pharma, Jewish Pharma primarily, like Pfizer. They were getting money from that. They had Jews who were running the CDC. we could go into that for hours. The COVID czar was Zients. They had lockdowns when the evidence was that lockdowns were not necessary, that they would damage people, cause many deaths, many great psychological and physical damages to people, to society, and not really stem the tide, that the vaccine was going to stop transmission. It was a total lie, that it was going to keep you from getting sick and it was going to keep you from transmitting. And unless you took the vaccine, you were in effect killing my grandmother. That's what people would say. We got to lock you up if you don't get a vaccine, and we're going to keep you out of society. But this is the power of big tech. But it's not just big tech. It's big tech controlled by one ethnic group that preaches a Jewish supremacy. And this is an ethnic group, by the way. And we should make it clear that there are Jews that oppose Zionism. There are Jews that oppose Jewish supremacy over the Palestinians and Israel and the occupied territories in Gaza and the crimes, crimes of genocide. But there is still a Jewish establishment, and not recognizing that there is a Jewish powerful establishment, and that they are controlling the narrative in so many things. Some of the most important media institutions in our land and across the world, and diviners of media, like, again, Google, that basically are gatekeepers that keep people from hearing the voices they need to hear to find the truth about things. So the ability for them to do this is dramatic, and this Jewish establishment doesn't exist. I'm going to give you an example of this. I was just looking at this morning before you told me I'd be on the show live to share this with you. This is a really interesting piece, I think, fascinating piece of information that we have going on here. Here's a survey. This was just done a couple weeks ago. AJC, American Jewish Committee survey, shows, they're touting this, Jews, American Jews, are deeply and increasingly connected, and supportive of Israel. A subtitle is 85% of American Jewish adults believe it's important for the U.S. to support Israel in the aftermath of October 7, and 57% of American Jews report, this is a recent poll too, feeling more connected to Israel or their Jewish identity after October 7 than before October 7. So here we have a situation where we have a massive literal genocide. And genocide, by the way, that's what this is. If somebody tries to argue it's not a genocide because there's no gas chambers, or because they can't kill all the Palestinians by killing a lot of, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands in Gaza, then that's ridiculous, because the Genocide Convention, which America signed and all the major parties of the world, the governments of the world, signed and agreed to, that genocide was defined as an attempt on the basis of ethnicity, nationality, race, religion, or other factors, that they were being attacked because of any of those factors, and endangered in whole or in part. In other words, it's a mass-directed murder or attack or destruction of any people. That's what you call genocide. It doesn't have to be something where we're killing everybody. It doesn't have to be something with a certain kind of thing like a gas chamber in it. And ironically, of course, gas chambers notwithstanding, there's been many, many genocides around the world, many, many more genocides against non-Jews, other people, and many genocides directed by the Jewish establishment. I'm called to remember, and I've talked about this a lot with you on my show, a very, very famous book that was done before the Second World War, before America's entry into the Second World War, written about the time of 1939, the beginning of the war. And this was published in the United States by a Jew, and many Jews were financially supporting it. And Jewish media, like the New York Times, and at that time the Washington Post, was also controlled by Jews. It's still dominated by Jews today, but it was actually run by Eugene Meyer at the time, the Washington Post. The New York Times has been run by Jewish Zionists and Jewish communists. They're almost in equal numbers. But and many of them were holding both of those misnomers, I guess you might say, because they seem to be a contradiction, but they're actually quite consistent in terms of their values. Both of them were working for Jewish supremacy in one way or the other. But if you take a look at these publications, so there was a book by Theodore Kaufman called Germany Must Perish. And this book it's at the very top of the book, the cover. I've pictured the cover on my site. And the cover shows the book that Hitler fears. It says Germany Must Perish, which they have behind that a swastika. And the first paragraph of the book says clearly, explicitly, a book for a plan for the total eradication of the German nation, a proportionment of its lands, and the destruction of all the German people. That's 80 million people, by the way. I mean, literally a call for genocide of Germans. And, of course, we had a Second World War in part by these Jews in the New York Times and the Washington Post and all over the world, both in government and infiltration in government and powerful bankers and so forth, like Jacob Schiff and so many others, that led us into a war in which at least 10 to 12 million Germans died. That's like a genocide, too, because they saw Germany as the greatest threat to Jews, because Hitler, and this was from 1933. I can show you an article from the major newspaper in Britain, not the Daily Mail. It was I can't think of the name of it, but the headline was Judea declares war on Germany. How the Jews all over the world are working hard to get us into a war. They didn't care that a world war would cause the deaths of tens of millions, and it caused anywhere from 60 to 80 million. This is a real problem when you've got a minority Europeans to kill each other by the millions, and you've got a problem in the war sense.
We're up at the break now. We'll come back, and we'll take a couple of callers.
I'll wrap up this narrative, and I'll go forward.
Yeah, after the nice North Korean music.
Go ahead.
Truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Hey there, this is Sheila with Hemp Paste by MyNutra. Why is hemp paste better than other CBD options on the market? It's important to point out that the common CBD oil does not contain CBDA or CBGA, and they're only found in fresh or raw hemp products, like hemp paste. Hemp paste contains the entire plant, minus any stems. This means the product retains the complete genetic code of the plant, which also includes those two vital cannabinoids, CBGA and CBDA. Over and over, experts keep saying the more intact or less processed the hemp plant is, the more effective it is. Happy hemp paste.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org. And visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Those were the smooth sounds of Filbert Applebag. You know, Dr. Duke, Filbert Applebag had volunteered to write some theme music for your show. You might want to take him up on it.
Yeah, I definitely want to do that. I think we ran some stuff by him before one time. Let me go into this little survey first before we could take the calls, because I want to make this point. It's an important point. Now, see, sometimes we're criticized being as being anti-Semitic, quote unquote, when we say something like Jews. We talk about Jews as a collective. And the truth is that there's no people on earth by any means spread all over the world in a small population, actually, in comparison with the world, 15 or 16 or 17 million people out of 8 billion people. But there's no people in the world that are more connected, more organized, more ethnocentric than Jews. In America, we have 52 major Jewish organizations. Jews are 2% of our population in the United States, and 52 organizations called it's called the Jewish heads of leading Jewish organizations. And it's 52 groups, according to the Forward magazine, a major Jewish publication. They actually have about $24 billion in funding for Jewish advocacy. So Jews are deeply organized. Now, there are some Jews, and I'm very happy to say that there are, and I'm thankful for those Jews, and I respect those Jews greatly. I honor them, actually, like people like Gilad Altman and others who oppose Jewish supremacism. But we never can get, you know, clear of the fact that Jews as a whole, in terms of the money, like the billionaire Jews, for instance, who control the biggest campaign fundraising of the Democrats, and much of the biggest funders of the Republicans, it's like their insurance policy, like the Adelsons for Trump. They have enormous power. And what are their sentiments? Okay, so here's an AJC survey. This is just 2 weeks ago. The headline reads, AJC, American Jewish Committee, that's the biggest Jewish organizations, ethnocentric organization in the planet, and certainly in America, shows American Jews are deeply and increasingly connected to Israel. It says, it goes on to say, 85% of American Jewish adults believe it's important for the U.S. to support Israel. Now, this is recently. This is after now the massive genocide that Israel's committing there is factual. And yet there, 85% of Jews support this. And it says, in the aftermath of October 7th, and 57% of American Jews report feeling more connected to Israel on their Jewish identity after October 7th than before. So not only are they think it's vital for the United States to support Israel, they also are more connected overwhelmingly to Israel than they were before after committing this massive genocide. It says, despite rising anti-Semitism making Jews feel less safe, American Jews are defiantly proud about who they are, even more connected to Israel, said AJC CEO Ted Deutsch, the social cost of being Jewish in America. And now they're complaining that how Jews are being victimized in this country, yet they're the most powerful economic group in the country. They're the most politically organized. They totally dominate American politics. They get billions and billions of dollars of American aid. They get us involved in wars costing us trillions of dollars, like the Iraq War. You can't make it up. And they've supported genocides. Like a good example is the New York Times, Jewish Power, and the Jewish government of the United States, who in many ways supported the Soviets in the 1930s, which were killing at that moment tens of millions of Christians in what was the Soviet Union. And they also killed 7 to 10 million, according to the United Nations study on this in 2003, that back in 1934, 35, they killed 7 to 10 million Ukrainian Christians, starved them to death. Most of those victims of the 10 million, I think it's even more than that. I studied in Ukraine and I'm familiar with it. I believe that most of those victims by far were children. Probably if they had 10 million victims, I'm sure they had 7 million of them were children. And then you had many, many more than that, three or four times that, a magnitude many times greater, of children that were affected for life by the disablement they had, by the lack of nutrition in these critical years of development in their lives. So these are the kind of realities in the world. So, but we have a constant, even the ones that are complaining about what's going on, the genocide of Israel, they're always saying, well, I'm Jews for against genocide, Jews for Palestine, and this, all this other kind of stuff. And they keep pointing out that, really, that there's so many Jews. Jews are really opposed to this genocide, too. But that's not really true. There's a percentage, which are, and I'm happy for that, and I'm proud of that fact, or happy for that fact. I don't want to be proud. I don't have any connection with Jews. But I'm like the fact that Jews are standing up against us to a degree. But to deny Jewish power and the Jewish influence of their overwhelming weight in media, in the internet, in book publishing, like they control Amazon today, they control Wikipedia today. And if we ignore these factors, there's no way we can bring any sort of justice or bring this world to peace. And the last thing I'll say is, not only are they killing these Palestinians, they've already killed at least 500,000 Ukrainians and a goodly number of Russians as well in this Ukraine war, which was never a war for Ukraine. It was a war from the beginning that you and I both pointed out was a war that would only kill a lot of Ukrainians for no aid. They haven't expanded their country. They haven't gotten rid of, you know, the populations of the, you know, eastern part of Ukraine. If anything, they're going to lose part of what their country was when all Russia was asking for was no NATO and neutrality. That's all. And the with the lies of the media, the Russia's trying, they're going to be conquering, they're going to go into Baltic states and they're going to go into Poland. Well, they haven't done that yet. They're only doing this. And the only thing they did in Ukraine was they couldn't afford to have nuclear tipped missiles on their borders. And they had to deal with it. And the war was not started by Russia. The war was started by the United States State Department, the Jewish State Department of this country, overthrowing the legal government of Ukraine. And then getting the Ukrainians to massively bomb and barrage and kill over 14,000, mainly Ukrainian civilians, men, women, and children. And yet they act like Russia is some sort of human rights criminal, even though Russia came in there to stop this slaughter of the eastern Ukrainians who are trying to defend themselves.
Go ahead. Now we're going to go to callers. Our first caller is President Putin from Indiana. We were talking about President Putin. I meant Vinny from Indiana. Vinny, welcome to the show.
Hey, Vinny, how are you?
Hi, David and Patrick. I want to ask you a question. Is it too late for Israel to bargain out of the hole that they're digging themselves into? And the reason I'm asking this question is, the minute Russia invaded Ukraine, people like Scott Ritter, Douglas McGregor, and now recently this Chaz Freeman and John Mearsheimer And, you know, Gonzalo Lyris kind of said this, too. They said that the invasion of Ukraine...
He was tortured and killed by the Jews of Ukraine.
Yeah. They made the point that it set in motion a series of events. You know, the closeness of now Russia and China economically, the deals with Iran, the ending of the war in Yemen taking over the Red Sea. But now, if you're talking about death, there's the analogy of, you know, from like the late 60s, this woman, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, wrote this book called, on death and dying. And she said that the five stages of death, the first was denial, the second one was anger, the third stage was bargaining, and the last two were depression and acceptance. And, you know, overwhelmingly, the Jewish community is either in complete denial. They think that they're still the greater Israel is still achievable, or their anger. They want to, you know, genocide in Gaza. They just said that they want to, that if they get in a war with Hezbollah, they're going to bomb all of Lebanon. They think that the Lebanese airport is part of Hezbollah, is under the control of Hezbollah. And Turkey says that they bombed northern Turkey. If they bomb northern Lebanon,
they also want to bomb everybody, you know?
Yeah. Now, when it comes to bargaining, I thought it was extremely significant that President Trump went on this podcast called the All In Podcast. And two of the guys on that podcast are Jewish South Africans. And the one that's really significant is a man named David Sacks. And Donald Trump took a bunch of questions from David Sacks. And David Sacks is interesting because he has had been, ever since the start of the war in Ukraine, he has appeared on podcasts where he has said that Israel needs to negotiate. The Jews need to negotiate.
You're talking about Jeffrey Sacks?
No.
His name is David. David Sacks.
Financier.
I want to make sure I get the right one. I like the look of Jeffrey Sachs a lot today, for sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. David Sachs is a big Silicon Valley billionaire. He's one of the only members of the Jewish donor class who is not like, you know, wants World War or, the greater Israel. The question now, though, is, and Donald Trump took these questions and talked to him, and it was very, very interesting because Donald Trump was still talking about negotiating the settlement to Ukraine, actually even talking to Iran and negotiating some kind of a rapprochement with Iran. And David Sacks is caught.
I think I'm getting the gist of your question. And let me rephrase it and see if I've got it right. You're saying, all right, are they going into, because they realize they're having these losses, are they going into some sort of negotiation phase? And through the negotiation, their underlying power will not be necessarily taken down, but through the negotiation in the so-called peace, they'll find a victory, and then they'll come back as soon as they're able by the more greater conditioning of, say, America through the control of media and the internet and all, and the infiltration of Western governments. Is that your question, or is that something about your question?
The point, I'm just saying that there are, you know, Donald Trump, you know, Miriam Adelson basically controls the entire Republican Party. He's at least reaching out to people who are not that guano insane, which is to Donald Trump's credit. But given, like, what happened yesterday, where Anthony Blinken said, we are perfectly willing to, if Russia, we're perfectly willing to seize NATO to seize the parts of Ukraine which are west of the Bug River, which is like Galicia, Bessarabia, and put troops on Ukrainian soil as part of NATO. And now that completely destroys any possibility of negotiating. I mean, what Douglas McGregor says, you're killing off the last chances of any kind of negotiated settlement to these situations, either in Israel or in Ukraine.
Well, Benny, thank you for your really pertinent and powerful commentary and your thoughts. And I'd like to go into these issues that you brought up and try to answer to you what I think is going on with this, if you like. So Please. Let me just dive in then, folks, to some of the things that he brought up. And yes, they end up, and by the way, everybody was totally preoccupied. I finally listened to Biden's NATO speech. I listened to the press conference and the questions and answers of the press conference, which are very revealing. And everybody talked about how Biden, you know, called Zelensky Putin, and everybody talked about how he called the vice president Donald Trump. I mean, you know, it's crazy. But really what's much more significant to me is if you look at his actual rhetoric, which is written by his Jewish master, Zients, by the way, is in charge of the same guy who is the COVID czar. I'm sure he's the chief of staff now. He was a Jewish chief of staff before that. Six of the seven top cabinet positions are Jews. And so if you read the speech and you listen to what he said there, never has a president of the United States, except during the Second World War, you know, ever really, I think, spoken as evilly for violence, military intervention, just total war against another major country. And this other major country is a nuclear power. And it's frightening what Biden said. Now, these aren't Biden's words. I mean, he doesn't recognize his wife half the time. These are the words put into his mouth by these entire Jews. He's a Zionist. He says he's a Zionist. And one of the most interesting quotes he ever made was to this Shlomo TV, which is Israeli TV. And he said, you know, as a young boy, I realized there's something special about Jews and how Jewish influence is so unique and so powerful and so influential. And he is a Zionist, and he's giving their pose. And he's just going just total 100% war. I mean, talk about a danger to America. And by the way, when you have a sitting president who ultimately can be blamed for any sort of beginning of a war or a catastrophic war, it lessens the people around them of blame, right? And so these people can act more with impunity if you're pulling the puppet strings. It's kind of like the Wizard of Oz, right? Who wasn't really the Wizard of Oz. He was behind the screen. He was behind the curtain, and he was a very frail old man. But the Wizard of Oz, this dangerous character in the movie, was very powerful and all that, and he's going to be blamed for whatever things the wizard did wrong. So it's really kind of even more dangerous for them to be behind the scenes controlling Biden, and then Biden will have to take the blame for whatever horrors erupt from this. And yes, horrors can erupt from this. A world war can erupt. But going back to the one of the fundamental issues you're talking about, I definitely worry about the fact that this is what you said was very prescient, that people they will go to once you know you're going to lose it, then you have to win the peace, you have to win the negotiation. And I think that they're trying to prepare themselves for that. And they're trying to develop this to where they can squeeze the sponge and get the last drops out of it. And that's what they're trying to do here. Now, Jews have always been resonant. They've always been able to reconstruct themselves. They've been kicked out of 1,042 different nations, according to a very good intellectual historical survey. But they always seem to be coming back, and they're more radical than ever. And Jews are more radical today than ever. And they might pull their horns in a little bit, but the danger to the world is extremely great today. I'm saying we have a great opportunity, but the only opportunity we have to take here, we have to do this opportunity not simply to expose the mass murder and the genocide of the state of Israel and these Jews who are calling for genocide, just like the Amaleks, you know, that the president of the country, Netanyahu, gave to the Jewish people. But we have to totally try to work to expose Jewish supremacy, not just in Israel, but in America, because none of these crimes in Israel could be possible. And the threat to the world far eclipses And it's terrible what's happened to Palestinians. And I say, my God, we got to protect the Palestinians. We got to do whatever we can to stop this horrible genocide. I've been fighting this for years. I had three chapters of my book, and I had a lot of subjects in my book about European issues, right? But I had three chapters on Israel and what the Palestinians and the people in the Middle East were facing. And I've lectured at about 20 universities throughout the Middle East. And that's important for me that these people are saved. At the same time, we've got to realize the threat that Zionism holds to the entire world. We have a real threat of nuclear war. We have a real threat. We have right now, and while Ukraine's on the back burner with the Israeli situation, and maybe a big giant war with Hezbollah and with Iran and Yemen and whatever, we really have a huge problem. Because we have destruction of an entire generation. And as I've tried to explain on my show, and I hope everybody will go to my show as well, as I love the Republic Broadcast Network. I love the work of Dr. Slattery on this network. But also, if you get my show every day, you're going to get a lot of nuances and you're going to go in deep into details about things. And I've gone very deeply into the details about how Jews as a people hate Ukrainians. They have a whole website. It's called My Jewish Learning. How about the Ukrainians were just terrible Jewish mass murderers and programmers and anti-Semites. And they had an article in the Jerusalem Post, their leading newspaper, by a Jew, how he would make a pilgrimage back to Ukraine, where he was apparently born, but he doesn't have any loyalty to that country, only to Jews. And even though Jews were a tiny percentage of Ukraine, tiny percentage. But by the way, they're not being killed in this war. They're doing the killing, though, in Gaza, and they're doing the killing of Ukrainians in the war by a Jewish president and other Jews that are powerful, and the Jewish power that controls Washington, which is also, by the way, destroying Europe's economy and well-being, causing a much lower European birth rate, having massive migration into European countries. So it's really, really vital that we take this opportunity, this mask being pulled off the ugly, terrible, criminal face of Jewish supremacy, and we need to use that as a lever to get this tyranny off of our necks and off of our brains, really, in effect, if you really want to talk about it, off of our hearts and minds, with the control of the global media and the global the phones in your pocket, which are devices that can spy on you.
Speaking of phones, we do have one more caller.
Okay.
So I'm going to bring on Lynn.
I hope these are important points to everybody listening. I really do.
Yeah. Lynn from Maryland, you have a question for Dr. Duke?
Thank you very much, Dr. Slattery and Dr. Duke, for taking my call. And thank you for bringing up cell phones, because it's so much worse than we could ever imagine. Zuboff's, rise of surveillance capitalism is kind of like the least of it. Talk about mind control and every other way of control, and we're doing all their dirty work for free and giving them all our data and our lives and our thoughts and our emotions. But
and more
I was
importantly,
thinking
they
about
can
the
affect
Abraham
our own minds,
Accord.
Right? That's the most important thing of all, is that they can send us to things. Even the response to Jewish power, they can have a way of directing that to organizations and to groups that don't really approach and talk about Jewish power, because Jewish power is that one power you can't discuss. They don't want to be discussed, because that's the most important issue of all. They mention the lies of the New York Times. They mention the lies of the media. They mention the ethnic cleansing, so to speak, of Europeans. They mention all, but they don't mention the fact that this media we're talking about is completely controlled by Jews. Even Google, by the way, the biggest media corporation on earth, is in contract in billions of dollars to the Mossad.
And commerce, and
yes,
in what you have the ability to buy and purchase, but also because they can control people's EEGs at this point due to the earbuds everybody has in their ears. And we've given consent. But you know what I was thinking was about the Abraham Accords. They already took away the Golan Heights. Think of the West Bank and all the settlers. And they've given all the Jewish people guns, and the Palestinians are in jail without any charges. You know,
yes,
women and their people are being tortured for doing not a damn thing wrong.
Can
and
I expand on what you just said there now, for instance? Let's just take the Abraham Accords. Everybody, including that Jordan Peterson, which is the biggest I think the guy is an absolute hypocrite of the worst order. He's always talking about honor and truth and duty and all that, and he's supporting this genocide in Gaza, and he supports the Abraham Accords. The Abraham Accords were done by Jared Kushner, who's a radical Jewish supremacist, was a Chabad Lubavitcher, but also supported the great Rebbe, who said basically that Gentiles and women were not even people, by the way. But interesting. So the Abraham Accords were trying to subvert the Palestinian people and the right of them to live by, guess what, by getting these Arab countries to say, oh, well, you're going to have an advantage. We're going to give you a commercial advantage because we control the banks of America. We control American policies. We're going to give you an advantage just by ignoring the Palestinians and basically letting the Jews take it all, even though the whole world is opposed to Jewish settlements in the West Bank. So the Abraham Accords is a good example. But again, we're going back again to the underlying question, which has got to be at the very top of our agenda. And that's exposing people to understanding that the Jewish domination of the media and our internet and our book selling, like in Amazon, which is a Jew, by the way, as well, today. He's the guy that's head of Amazon. This is the greatest threat to a sovereign mind and a free humanity. And it's not just the EKGs and so forth that they can monitor. They can monitor your opinions by subverting sites or hiding sites they don't want you to go to and sending you where they want you to go to so you can get brainwashed. That's the music, huh?
Yes. Thank you. Coming up next.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.